Let's begin. We are still in Daniel Perek Yud, chapter 3. And we are up to Pasuk Dalet, sentence 4. This is the beginning of the response to Daniel's prayer, Daniel's tefillah. We are in the third year of Cyrus, 3 years after the prayer that happened in the previous chapter. We had some discussion about where Daniel was living right now. And the first three sentences set the stage for it, with the information that Daniel had been fasting. We had a little discussion about the 3 weeks. And now, Pasuk Dalet, chapter 10, sentence 4. If you're using the stone Tanakh, which is the one that seems to be here in the room, it's page 1802. Uviyom esrim va'arba'a l'chodesh harishon, on the 24th day of the first month. Vani ha'yisi al yad hanahar ha'gadol hu chidakel. I was by the great river, the Chidakel River. The Chidakel River, we assume, I think, is the Tigris River. Abarbanel understands that he is actually physically by the Tigris. Not that the Tigris is part of his vision, which is what Ralbag suggests, but that Daniel had been in Shushan, and then he traveled to Babylon, and he had this vision by the Chidakel River. And it's the 24th day of the first month. That means the 24th day of
Nisan.
Biblically, the first month will be Nisan rather than Tishrei. But what that means is, since it's after 3 weeks of fasting, is that he actually fasted through Pesach.
It's a day after Pesach, 2 days after Pesach.
Well, he fasted through. He fasted for 21 days. Unless you take the view that was suggested last time by some, that 3 weeks doesn't mean 3 weeks of days, but rather it was actually 21 years, because remember that we saw week to mean 7 years at a shot. So it's possible to argue that what we're talking about was actually 21 years of fasting, and it wasn't necessarily fasting, it was simply refraining from delicacies. So that could be the explanation, but remember, we have precedent elsewhere in Tanakh, fasting during Pesach. What's the other case that we know of?
Esther.
Right? When Esther does her 3-day fast before going to the king, and she says everybody should fast, that's the opening day, that includes the opening days of Pesach. So it is not unprecedented. Well, actually, it's the other way around.
Daniel's first.
Daniel would be the precedent for Esther of fasting on Pesach, because marginally, Daniel's story here is before the Purim story. That's interesting. Okay. And remember, of course, that he will not be going back for the Korban Pesach. There is no Pesach offering being brought at this stage. So it would appear. Okay. So Daniel has a vision. Well, actually, not a vision. I'm using the word vision because we will see something visual here. But remember that we said last time, it's a davar. This is basically a verbal message. It's not where he sees things like beasts and statues and so on. So pasuk hey, sentence 5. Va'esa es einai, I raised my eyes, va'era, and I saw. V'hine ish echad lavush badim. There was a man wearing badim. Badim is linen. We generally assume white linen.
Umosna. Linen is a special linen.
Bad is linen. What do you mean?
Today we use the word bad for
anything.
Bad is any material.
No, but biblically, bad is linen. Okay. Specifically, yeah. Okay. It's not any fabric biblically, yeah. Umosnav chagurim bechesem ufaz. And his loins were girded with ketem upaz. So upaz, you know the word paz, of course, is gold. That's where the translation here takes it. His loins were girded with fine gold. And Rosho ketem paz in Shir HaShirim talks about the head of the beloved being fine gold. The word ketem today is used to mean stained, right? A ketem on a garment has meant the stain, but it means it's colored fine gold. That's the appearance of this person, but we're not done yet. Ugviyaso kisar shish. His body was like Tarshish. Tarshish is a term that we use for the sea. It's a term used for the sea, the blue of the sea, but It's also used in Yechezkel. I gave you the reference on your sheet. Did I or did I not? No, I didn't. But Yechezkel, it's chapter 1, sentence 16. We're not going to look it up right now. But you can look it up and see that it's a term used, Tarshish is used for heavenly forces. It's also a term we use for a blue gem that appeared on the Choshen.
Is that what
a barrel? That's what a barrel is. Yeah.
Barrel, okay. Barrel, the not Yiddish barrel.
No.
English barrel. Okay.
B-E-R-Y-L.
So that's the image of his body. So his body is blue. He's girded with gold. He's in garb of white. This is a very, this is a great vision here.
Blue man.
Kimar'e Barak. I'm sorry, Ufanak, Kimar'e Varak, his face was like lightning. Ve'enav kilapide esh, his eyes were like torches of fire. Uzro'osav, Umargalosav, Ke'en and Nechoshes Kalal, his arms, his feet were like shining copper. Nechoshet can be copper, brass, bronze. We've talked about this on other occasions. Because pure copper wouldn't necessarily have been found so easily then, but it would be alloyed with to become either brass or bronze, depending on whether it's alloyed with tin was one of them. I forget what the other one was alloyed with, but maybe nickel was the other one. In any case, shining. You know, this coppery metal, the feet and the hands are of this shining coppery metal. V'kol devarav k'kol hamon, and his words, his voice was like the voice of multitudes. So linen garb we see elsewhere as being white, a sign of purity. The Kohen Gadol goes into the Kodesh Kadashim, the Holy of Holies, wearing this ketonet bad, also wearing linen. It indicates purity. The belt being pure gold, again the emphasis on purity, the body being of this color like the heavens, and then you have the fire and the lightning and the shining copper seen in flashes, like you can't see the entity itself, but rather you can just see the light that's emerging from it, and this frightening voice. That's what Daniel perceives. Someone must have done a painting. Yeah, someone must have done a painting of this at some point. So, Vera'isi ani in Pasuk Zayin, sentence 7, Vera'isi ani Daniel Avadias Hamara. I, Daniel, I'm the only one who saw this. V'ha'anashim asher ha'yu imi lo ra'u es Hamara. The men with me did not see this. We didn't know he had people with him. Daniel's been a loner for the bulk of this book. Who are the only people he ever had with him? Right, Hanani, Mishael, Azariah, also known as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Exactly. And so if you take a look quickly at your sheet, at source number 2. Source number 1 was something we read last time. But the Talmud says, Man ninu anashim, who are these men with him? Amar Rabbi Yirmiya, v'item Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. Rabbi Yirmiya says, some said Rabbi Chiya bar Abba said, Zech Hagai, Zechariah, Umalachi. Sure enough, the missing three. They haven't been around for a while, but they're still here, and they are with him, but they don't see this being. And that leads that passage there in the Talmud to discuss the level of Daniel relative to them. Daniel, in the Talmud there, Daniel is not viewed as a prophet. Remember, we saw this in the beginning of the year, the beginning when we started Daniel, the debate as to whether Daniel is a Navi. Is he a prophet, or is he a sage? And Abarbanel was adamant that he's a prophet. But most others disagree and say he's a sage, he has great insight, but he's not experiencing prophecy. So that the Talmud has a discussion about whether it's better to be a prophet or a sage, if Daniel can see this and they can't. But continuing in the biblical sentence here, Aval charada gedola nafla lehem, great fear befell them. They shook. Charada gedola. Term that we see, for example, when Yitzchak realizes he's given the wrong blessing, he's given the blessing to the wrong child. He gave it to Yaakov instead of Esav. Echarad, charada gedola. The gedola ad meod. Yes. It's a zarkasagol.
Oh, okay.
If they couldn't see anything,
yeah,
I'm assuming they couldn't hear anything.
Well, it doesn't come up.
Why would they become so afraid?
Hold on for a second. Don't assume that they can't hear anything, but they won't. But they're not going to hear anything because the rest of the sentence concludes, "Vayivrachu behechave." They ran away, so there's no opportunity for them to hear anything. They leave before the speech starts. But the sages are indeed bothered. by this. So what exactly? They didn't see anything. They're not there for any sound. So what's going on? So the Talmud here in the same passage that I only excerpted one line from says they didn't see, but their mazel saw. What in the world does that mean? So it could mean the reference to the constellations, but it more likely means the soul has some level of awareness of things that doesn't make it into the conscious mind. So that they're not seeing anything with their eyes, but there's some fear that accrues here in this circumstance because of what they're in the presence of. And that's the idea. For more, see that passage there on this. Okay. So, what do you do when you see something like this? Pasuk Chet, sentence 8. Daniel collapses. Vani nishar. By the way, he's going to collapse multiple times in this chapter, so get used to it. Vani nisharti levadi. I remained alone. Right? The rest of them run away. I saw this great vision, and no strength remained within me. My glory, my own radiance, actually became a destructive force on me. And what he means by that is that which had given him his energy and strength simply disappeared. His strength goes out from within. Velo atarti koach, and I had no strength remained for me. I lost it all. Vayishmas kol devarav, and then I heard him speaking. I heard his words. Shomias kol devarav, and when I heard his voice, vani ayisi near dam al panayu fanai arza, I fell asleep on the ground. I fell to the ground. I went unconscious. And this, remember, we've seen before in this book, is the experience of Daniel and the Jews at Sinai of not being able to
hear the name of Hashem,
right?
And they ask Moshe to,
right. We can't bear it. And the Medrash expands on them, you know, losing consciousness and so on. That's what we're talking about here. Daniel simply cannot tolerate the experience, this combination of what he sees and what he hears. V'hine yad nag'a bi, but a hand touched me. V'tini'eni al birkai v'chapos yadai, and brought me to my knees and the palms of my hands. So he has some level of elevation. The angel brings him into some level of elevation. He's not really ready to stand up. You could suggest, if you wanted to, that this is sort of like the person who passed out, so they're getting into a position with air, but not expecting him to actually stand. But he's being brought up to some level of elevation. And Vayomer Eli, he said to me, this angel said to me, Daniel Ish Hamudos. Once again, the term which we saw last week as well, and the same idea here is expressed, Abarbanel brings it, Hamudot, desire, meaning the one of desire. Daniel, you desired, I brought it in source number 3, you desired to know all of these things. Since you long to know what's going to happen in the future, because remember, that was where all this came from and Daniel's prayer came from, because he was very scared. He said, God, have you dropped the idea of the 70 years? Now it's going to be 2,300 years and so on. So Daniel, you long to know all these things. I'm still in source number 3 to know their secrets. Havein bidvarim asher anochi dover elecha. Understand that which I tell you. Va'amod bizkifa v'yishuv adas. Stand up straight and have a settled mind. Kilotia ha'hasaga hazos lebehemos v'lo la'anashim mebulbalim. You can't grasp this if you're going to be a beast, if you're going to be a confused person. You have to get it. And so, going back into Pasuk Yud Aleph, into sentence 11, he says, Havein badvarim asher anochi dover elecha. Understand that which I'm telling you. Va'amod alamdecha, and stand up. Because now I have been sent to you. End of quote. When he said this to me, I stood shaking. I stood there shaking before this being. And now we get message number 1 from this being, who, by the way, fitting it into previous material is Gavriel. Remember, Gavriel spoke to him before. This is Gavriel now as well. Vayomer Eli, he said to me, Al tira Daniel, don't be afraid, Daniel. Not don't be afraid of this vision, but don't be afraid of that which caused you to fast. Remember, we said last time, he is fasting in the third year of Cyrus because the decree to build the, to, for the Jews to return to build up the walls of Jerusalem and so on has been halted. So he's saying to him, don't be afraid. Ki min hayom harishon asher nasata es libcha le'avinu lihisanos lefnei elokecha nishme'u dvarecha. From the first day when you turned your heart to understand and to fast before your God, your words were heard. Va'ani vasi bidvarecha, and I have arrived because of your words. So in other words, your prayer is answered. Don't worry. Now, note the turn of phrase. From the first day, not when you prayed, but when you turned your heart to understand and to fast. So take a look, please, at source number 4. Part of a longer paragraph in Abarbanel, but you'll get the point from here. Kema'amar ha-Navi, like the prophet says, this is in Yeshaya, Tarim Yikra'u, Vani e'ene. Before they even call, I will answer them, God says. The Rotzalomar, meaning, Kasher yitnu lev lehitpalel v'likro, when they turn their hearts to pray and to call, yikabel Hashem tefila sambatan yisam, Hashem will accept their prayer and fasting. In other words, even before you've actually prayed, the very fact that you turn to God for help is what makes you worthy of a response. That's the idea. I'll give you a brief preview of this week's Toronto Torah, just because, yeah, I edited the articles in advance, and I edited one of the articles today. Yair Manis wrote a very interesting piece in it about Bilam. You know, the classic question that comes up every year when you read Parashat Balak, of why does God first tell Bilam not to go, and then he tells him to go? So Yair quoted an idea, which you're probably familiar with, that when a person prays, the value of prayer is not so much in convincing God to do what you want him to do, but rather it's about how it affects you. The fact that you are turning to God in prayer is a statement about who you are. It's a statement that you are somebody who does this, and it causes you to elevate yourself in order to be worthy. That's the positive side of things. It's a classic idea and worthy of its own discussion. But the point he made is that what happens for Bilam between the time of the first time he speaks to God and the second time is the opposite. Bilam turns to the representatives of the king of Midian who want him to go curse the Jews. And he says to them, I can't go with you. And as the Medrash explains, he's saying you're not high ranking enough. Because you then see that what happens is the king sends him higher ranking people. And he says to them, well, I can't go, even if you would give me a house full of silver and gold, I still couldn't go. So he's named his price. And what he's done is he has debased himself with this. And as a result, God says, okay, fine, you go. Because what ends up happening is Bilam goes to his own destruction. First, his own humiliation as he tries to curse and he's unable to, and then ultimately his death. The point being that if that's a case where someone demonstrates how he's not worthy, and therefore God answers his prayer. Sort of the flip side. But I just read that this morning. I really liked the way he had done that. But going back to the point here, God says, when you turned your heart to pray, that was already great. And therefore, actually, your prayers have been answered. You don't need to be afraid of this halt to the construction process because I'm listening and all will be good. Well, if that's true, then why did God wait for 21 days of fasting? Right? Or 21 years, if you were to take the view of some of the commentators of Rashi, that he actually was doing 21 years of this, and it wasn't about the halt, according to Rashi, it was just the general prayer. Well, that is answered in sentence 13, in a pasuk which opens up a real can of worms. Visar malchus paras omeid lenegdi esrim ve'echad yom. for 21 days, the officer of the Empire of Paras, of Persia, their representative up in the heavens, he stood opposite me. V'hine Michael, achad asarim harishonim, bala ozreini. Michael, one of the first officers before God, came to assist me. V'ani nosarti sham etzel malchei Paras. That was where I was, opposite the representatives of Persia. In other words, I was in battle for 21 days with the angels representing Persia.
This is Gabriel still talking.
This is Gabriel talking. Correct. What in the world is he talking about? This is a very hard thing to understand on so many levels. One level, I don't understand what time it means to angels. What does that mean? He's there for 21 days. Angels are now within time, like there's time passing for them. They're not in some other realm. Obviously so, as it's being presented here.
And that's the same time frame that Daniel is fasting.
Well, that's right, and that's exactly the point.
Yeah.
Day one, I could have come to you, but I was stopped by the Persian forces, which now enters us into a new question, and perhaps a more significant question than even, and that is, what is the role of these angels that they're fighting with each other and preventing me from doing this and so on? Like, what exactly is that about? So the answer seems to be, and we're going to see more of this in a moment in Abarbanel, but the answer seems to be that yes, there are, in this view of the cosmos, angels up in the heavens, and what they dictate happens to the nations that represent them down on earth. In other words, not only to view them as our representatives, but the people here on earth as the angels' representatives. And the idea is that that which happens to the angel will happen to us.
Is this part of their astrology or something?
So it's not even astrology. It's angelology, really. Because there's no linking of a particular angel with a particular constellation or star. No.
But when you talk about Mazel, isn't that constellation and stars?
Yes, but this isn't Mazel. These are Sarim that are separate. Their view of astrology was that it was a natural force. Planets would exert influence in the same way that they do gravitationally, so too they do on some other level. This is a view that the angel up in the heavens is actually connected here and is an intelligent being. And whatever happens to it happens to the people it's supposed to be connected to down here on earth. And not just as like an old thing, but as a constant ongoing thing. So we have an angel and the angel represents it. Well, whether Jews do or not actually remains to be seen. We have to get to that. But all these other nations all have angels that are actually linked to their existence, success, failure, wars, the whole bit. And so Gabriel wants to cause the Persians to again permit the construction of the temple, but his Persian counterpart is not willing. And so he spends 21 days trying to defeat the Persian representative up there. That's his response to Daniel. And now he says, Uvasi lahavincha esa sheyikra lamcha b'achris hayamim. I have come to make you understand that which will happen to your nation in the end of days. Once again, that end of days thing, we discussed that last time also. Ki od chazon layamim, because there's another vision about these days that are coming. So Daniel at this point collapses again. Pasuk tetvan, I blame him. Sentence 15. Ubedabroi mi kadverim ha'elo, when he spoke such words to me, Nasati fanai artsa v'ne'alamti, I turned my face downward and I became mute. Vihine kidmus b'nei adam nogea al sifasai. Then there was the form of, or something like the form of human beings, and it touched my lips. V'eftach pi, and I opened my mouth. Va'adabra, and I spoke. Va'omra el ha'omed l'negdi, and I said to the one who stood opposite me. Once again, you have this idea of contact with the angel restoring. and this time restoring his speech, and I said, Adoni, my master, b'mar'ah nehechud tzirai alai v'lo atzarti koach. My innards were turned when I saw this vision, and I lack the strength to continue. They render here tzirim as joints in the art school, which is interesting because tzir today is used for hinges. Well, labor pains, tzirei leida, is also used. That's true. True. So the so he says, and in fact, actually, the Dan Mikra edition takes it as pains. Pains inside. They do pains in the Koran edition.
Cease with pains.
Okay. Yeah. So the... That's the, but however we take it, he's saying, you know, I'm unable to bear this. V'heich yuchal eved Adoni zeh ledaberim Adoni zeh. He speaks in the third person out of fear. It's clearly a product of fear. He says, how could the slave of this master of mine speak with this master of mine? He means himself. How can I speak? I don't have any more strength, and my soul does not remain within me. There's that reference to the soul leaving the body. So he's apologizing for collapsing and saying, what am I supposed to do? Once again, he touches me, this form of a man, and gives me strength. Vayomer, and he said, Al tira ish hamudos, do not fear the one who desires to know all these secrets. Shalom lach, peace to you. Chazak vachazak. Be strong, he says to him, twice. Abarbanel suggests shalom, peace, is in his intellectual capacity. Chazak is his physical strength. Uchedabroi mi his chazakti. When he spoke with me, I became strong. Va'omra yidaber Adoni ki chizaktani. And I said, my master, speak, for now I have been given strength. You have strengthened me. And so we get the second message. Va'yomer, and he said, Hayodata lama basi elecha. Do you know why I came to you? Ve'ata ashuv lihilachem imsar paras. Now I'm going to return to where I was and go to war with the angel of Persia in order to be able to help you. But v'ani yotzei v'hinei sar yavan ba. But you should know, I left, right? And the angel of Greece came because...
So isn't that... an indication that Greece is going to take over Persia?
Oh, yeah. Totally. That's what I see, yeah. He says, now it's going to be Greece. I need to go back to battle with the ones who are going to halt the construction, because the construction is halted again in Ezra chapter 4, sentence 6, which I did not put on your sheet either, although I wanted to. Does that count? But Ezra chapter 4, sentence 6. But he says, even after I succeed there, there are going to be problems from Greece. Avala gilucha, but he says in Pasuk Chafal of sentence 21, the last one in our chapter, but I'll tell you, as harashum b'chsav emes, that which is recorded in the writing of truth, meaning rashum, Barbanel says, that which is already decreed from before. And it's emet, it's true, once it becomes reality. Ve'ein echad mischazek imi al eila ki im Michael sarchem. All of the other angels were against me. I had nothing with me to support me other than Michael your sar. Michael, your officer. It sounds like Michael is the representative of the Jews. Abarbanel does not like that idea. If you take a look at source number 5 on your sheet, he says, "Behios l'chol uma mazal u'v'kochav b'shamayim, hayalo sar lamala mashmia l'kulam." So there is a link, actually, to the constellations that Sharon was referring to. Each nation has a mazal, a constellation, and a kochav, a star in the heavens, and it has an officer which instructs all of them. And what that means seems to be that, well, he actually spells it out for you. Go a couple more words. The reign of the nation and its empire is influenced by the alignment of the stars. So what you have is a pipeline. You have angelic forces that are up there doing battle with each other, getting whatever their fortunes are upstairs. Whatever the verdict is upstairs is translated into an influence on the stars in the heavens, which then exert influence on the nations below. So the stars in the heavens are a natural phenomenon, and they are set in motion by the angel that represents the nation. That's the way Abarbanel understands what's going on. However, we know that in Mazal Yisrael, we don't have a constellation controlling us. If we don't have a constellation controlling us, then how do the angels control us? So Abarbanel says they don't. Rak ha'uma Yisraelis ein la mazal v'kochav. Jews don't have these constellations and stars. Hu nachlas Hashem yisbarach. She is the portion of Hashem. Uchmamar Moshe Rabbeinu Eved Hashem, as Moshe Rabbeinu said, Upentisa inecha Hashemayma, etc., etc. Shachalak Hashem alokecha osam lecholo amim veschem lokach Hashem. Moshe tells the Jews, don't look heavenward for your support, the way the nations around you do. The pasuk continues there. You'll see the sun and the moon and all the stars. And you will be led astray. And you're going to bow to them. And you'll serve them. No, God already appointed these for all the nations. They control the nations. They don't control you. God has selected you. And when the sentence says, Michael, your officer, it sounds like Michael is our angel. That does not contradict this. He isn't like the officer of Persia or of Greece. That's why it doesn't say the officer of Israel. He says, Sarchem, your officer, suggesting he's acting on your behalf right now. But you don't have an officer. You have a direct line to God. There is no officer, really, for you. So Gavriel is saying sort of, you know, I'm currently on loan to you. Michael is on loan to you. But we aren't your officers the way that the nations have officers. Shana.
So this is actually a way of thinking about why Yaakov ends up wrestling with an angel who's sometimes said to be Sar Esav, right? Because
there is no other counterpart. Right. There's no counterpart. The angel of Esav has to be. That's a good point. Interesting. There's a lot to be done with this. I don't know what a lot means, but there's a lot to be done with this.
So in Judaism, there's nothing attached to astrology.
What do you mean? There's nothing supernatural attached to it.
No, that we... You know how in the old days, in prehistoric days, used to read the stars or whatever to know what to do.
Right.
We don't do that.
Well, we actually have a biblical prohibition against calculating auspicious times to do things in that style.
Right.
So yeah, we're taught that we're not supposed to do that. Yeah.
But somehow we still believe that the other nations can access it.
Yes.
Because they know that they're doing it.
So the question is, is it real, or are they just being foolish and we can, so to speak, look down at them and laugh because they do this?
I mean, it's viewed as being a real thing. I think it's very clear that they believe that it's a real... No. I'm sorry. No, I mean, the Jewish sages, like Abarbanel in this case, absolutely think, not as a supernatural force, which to me is an important distinction to make, they believe this is part of the natural order. That the natural order of things is that there are forces and influences, and that the stars may well be a part of that. Not everyone agreed, but... there's a strong trend among Jewish authorities to say it exists, but we're not supposed to draw on it. And that there's the minority view. I think they're the minority that classically said, no, it doesn't exist at all. It doesn't bother me from a philosophical perspective that Abarbanel believes that there are forces out there. Frankly, I wouldn't necessarily think that he's entirely wrong, because there are an awful lot of forces that I can't see and that I don't understand. And yeah, whenever they try to explain to me the how gravity works, I get awfully confused. So let me just say right now I think that the majority classically did believe that there was something to it, just not for us. It's not ours. That's what I would say.
Okay.
Okay, that concludes Perek Yud. That concludes chapter 10. I told you last time that the rest of chapter 10 is easy.